Hey listeners, welcome to our podcast, where we drink really tasty coffee and we bring you the stories of people whose lives have been changed by God. We believe there is wisdom and learning from each person's story. So wherever you are, whatever you're doing, relax and enjoy the conversation. This is Brewing Narrative. Hello and welcome back to another episode of Brewing Narrative. My name is Landon. I am joined by Matt.
What up?
Ryan.
Hey, hey.
Our amazing producer, James, and our awesome guest, Mr. Mitch Hetty. What's up, Mitch?
How's it going, guys?
What's up, dude? What's going on?
How is everyone doing on this lovely Wednesday evening?
Doing pretty good. We were on a trip this past weekend.
We were.
So that was a lot of fun. Just time to relax. But, you know, every time you go on vacation, you come back and you're more tired than when you left for some reason, so...
Yeah, you need like a vacation for your vacation.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I was just telling someone earlier, I think I got more sleep than I should have because I've been used to waking up pretty early every day. And then when we were at Lake the Ozarks, I woke up at like 9 or 10 every morning. Mm-hmm. So then I came back and it's just really thrown me off. Like I'm just still feel tired when I get up. I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah.
How are you, Mitch?
I'm doing good. It's been a while since I've been on a spring break trip.
Yeah.
But I remember maybe, you know, getting 10 hours of sleep over 4 days. So
yeah,
I remember those times.
Yeah.
Good times.
Yeah. It's either like one way or the other. Either you like really take advantage of getting to sleep in or like your friends are up until 5 a.m. playing games and then they still get up at 8 a.m. for cereal.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You we know, sat in the jacuzzi until 1 in the morning.
The jacuzzi.
For context, though, Mitch, you're no spring chicken. I think you got like 6 years on us.
Maybe 7.
I still consider you a pretty young guy.
Still springy.
Still springy.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I did have a life goal of making it to 30 and not feeling old, and I have accomplished that.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. Well, we'll get into later on just about how much of a spring chicken you are.
All right. Right? Springy spring.
Our listeners are like, ooh, what does that mean? Stay tuned, folks.
Stay tuned.
Stay tuned. All right. Well, as always, Mr. Matt Chernando. Right. See what I did there?
Yeah,
I Matt Chernando, tell us what we're drinking.
So today, and also for the listeners out there, we are at Upshot again. This is our second time here. And of course, we had to tap
into... Never been here before.
Yeah, Landon's never been here, except he's talked about it in every episode.
Yeah, pretty much.
And so we had to take the opportunity to try one of their new coffees, the Kenya AB Imara.
Mm-hmm.
How did you brew this one?
So this is our second time being here. The first time we were here, we drank a Rwanda, and it was with Chris Ert, and I brewed it on the Curtis Batch Brewer. And so I did that the same for this one. It's very consistent, never lets me down. And it's just good, you know, when we're trying to get set up, when we're trying to kind of catch up with each other and, you know, talk about the evening and stuff, it's just nice to be able to let the machine do the work.
Right. So. And so the last time we were here, you said we drank the Rwanda. That was like one of your very first ones. Second coffee that you guys roasted.
Mm-hmm.
So this would probably be like... 7?
If you're not thinking about the blends, probably 6 or 7.
Yep. So I would say that... So my take on this is that I can definitely taste the improvement on the roast, profile. Not that anyone was bad, but this one, and just to kind of give you a little background, as soon as you were brewing it, I smelled it immediately, and I was like, ooh.
Yeah,
I can tell that this one was going to be good. And usually good roasted coffee, you can tell right away.
Right. But
before I get into the taste notes, Mitch, what do you think about the coffee?
It's definitely delicious. I am not a coffee connoisseur, even though I have a French press, an aerator, and some other things in my cupboard from my good friend over here, Matt Hernando, who got me started in the good coffee realm of things.
Mm-hmm.
But it is really good. I definitely taste a lot of different flavor tones, as you would say.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I couldn't really maybe give you those tones, but...
And you're also mainly a cold brew guy.
I do love good cold brew. Yeah. Yeah. Say, convenience.
You kept me busy.
I was just going to say, yeah. Mitch single-handedly kept you busy.
Maybe not single-handedly, but pretty much single-handedly.
Also, you got some extra left? I was that guy.
Yeah. Ryan, what do you got?
I want to make a compilation video or audio clip of every time that we ask Ryan to be okay, and then he goes to pick up his cup, he swirls it, tastes it.
Give me a second.
3 hours later. Okay, sorry, Ryan.
That's content right there.
We won't put you on blast.
No, this is can't put my finger on it.
Hey, we are a podcast with all different styles of coffee drinkers, and Ryan is a good example of one style of coffee.
It's funny because every guest that comes on, they'll be like, you know, they'll start out and say, oh, you know, I'm not a coffee expert. I'm thinking, have you met Ryan?
Next.
James, what do you think?
Give me the mic here.
Oh, right, hand me the mic. So, I like this coffee, and I'm the first one to get the bag.
Mm.
Right? Remember
this is
that?
True. You were the first one.
Yep, I drove 20 minutes to visit Landon and got a bag. And
it had been bagged probably, or it had been roasted probably 1 hour before that.
Right, ooh. And I tried the next day. It was okay. So I give them a rest a little bit, and the next day it's pretty good. I did it with AeroPress. That's my brew of choice. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed that, and I'm gonna keep doing this every episode now.
Okay.
I'm gonna rate it. I'm gonna give it 8.5. Since I got the first bag, I'll give it a 9. How about that?
Okay.
There you go.
I like it.
We got him on the mic for one episode, and now he's addicted.
Give him an inch, they'll take a mile.
Yeah, shout out to you guys for taking care of things last week. Y'all killed it. It was a great episode with Fernando. Really enjoyed listening to it.
It was.
I had even a higher level of excitement listening to that because I didn't have to listen to myself. But yeah. It was an awesome episode. So.
Yeah, I kind of cringed a little bit. But well, anyways.
You guys did a great job.
Thank you.
Thanks,
listen
Mitch.
To it every week. It was done very well.
Appreciate it.
Cool. Anything else on the...
Well, what do you got?
Oh, yeah, so this is... Okay, so I have to preface. I think I mentioned this on one episode. We were drinking a coffee from Burundi, and it kind of reminded me of a Kenya. So for those of you out there, Kenyan coffees are very... I always feel like I'm talking about the people. Are very kind of polarizing in the... specialty coffee realm because they just naturally and inherently kind of have this like very savory kind of like tomato soup quality. I mean, and once again, this is all as Matt's mentioned many times, and it's super important to bring it up. You know, when we talk about tasting notes and what it reminds us of, it's just that it's what it reminds you of. It's not like I've not just cracked open a can of Campbell's tomato soup. So it either like people either really love them or people don't. And I tend to be that person where, like, if we, back when we used to be a multi-roaster, if we would get one in the shop, I'd say, oh, cool, Kenya. Like, yeah, I'm going to try it. But it probably wouldn't be my coffee that I would go to every time. But this particular Kenya, I really enjoy. It's kind of, it's a light roast, just like anything else that we drink. But it's kind of, I'm getting this, like, kind of cinnamon, like, sugary, kind of, like, almost, like, subtle, like, spice notes. And it's got this kind of syrupy kind of mouthfeel, which is kind of nice. But it really is not inherently savory. It's more sweet than anything.
On, like, for real, though, I think I'm getting more of, like, a tartness from it.
Like a Pop-Tart?
more like a tart strawberry.
Yeah.
Maybe not necessarily a Pop-Tart.
You're pretty close.
Yeah.
Yeah, so my take, whenever I first drank it, I kind of got the raisin brown sugar like maple syrup kind of.
Yeah, and like raisin, blackcurrant, caramelized sugar. Those are like very, very standard like go-tos for Kenya taste notes.
Yeah, and actually, you know, not to go too off board, one of the, it kind of reminded me a little bit of the three Africas from Blue Bottle that we had on our episode, because it was the Ethiopia, Rwanda, and something else that was mixed in there. But you can kind of taste this one. It's not like your other Africas, like the I don't know what other Africas have we had on here.
Ethiopia, Burundi, Rwanda.
Yeah.
The Uganda. That was the other coffee that was in that Blue Bottle.
Yeah. So it's not as like strong as those. Maybe, but it kind of airs more on the side of like Ethiopia, which makes it pleasurable for me.
Mm-hmm.
But the roaster taste notes have cranberry, dried plum, and caramelized sugar. So we're pretty spot on as far as like the tartness and
Jared's the head roaster. He roasted this coffee. We cupped all of the new coffees and looked at the tasting wheel and just kind of, you know, put our heads together to figure out kind of what we were coming up with. But spot on.
Yeah, so if you want to pick this one up, you can pick it up at the shop or you can go to weareupshotcoffee.com.
Yeah, so we actually went through the first like run of this coffee like with bags. Like we sold out of them so fast.
Not surprised.
And so what you can do, come on in. You can get a pour over of this coffee. We don't have any bags as of right now, but I think we're going to get some more bagged up. We do have another coffee on, Papua New Guinea, that's very similar to this coffee. It's sweet. It's kind of got that same kind of savoriness. But if you buy a bag, you get a free pour over with that. So any of you listening in the area, come on in and we can hook you up. Well, yeah, come on by. We'll hook you up. So
you'll figure something out.
Yeah. But anyway, so Mitch, welcome on, man.
Glad to be here.
Yeah. Thanks for being here. Opportunity. So just, I guess before we dive in, like, who are you?
Who am I? That's a deep question, but I'll keep it decently surface. My name is Mitch, Mitch Hetty. You know, I have a wonderful wife, Melissa, and two amazing, crazy, awesome, emphasis on crazy, boys, 5 years old, or about to be five in June, reminds me every day, and two, and they are, I like to say, the most rewarding challenge ever. I love being a father. So, yeah.
I think you do a good job at it.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. It's been cool kind of just watching you from a distance. And, you know, anyone that knows you and anyone that sees the picture that we're going to post of us will be able to see, like, you're a big guy. And you're muscular. Like, you know, you can throw a lot of weight around. But it's been really cool to see, because I've known you for a long time, but I didn't know you as much, you know, when I first moved to Missouri. But I think the more that I've gotten to know you, and especially with since you've had your boys, like just getting to see a really like soft, like gentle side of you come out, and just this like kind of like strong but mighty. And I think your boys are just going to benefit from that so much, just to know like what it's like to be strong, but to be humble and to be meek, because meek's not a bad thing, you know?
I appreciate that.
it's funny because as you were saying that, I had got a notification and then like my Facebook popped up and it was like this picture. And
that's so cool.
Look at the timing on there. Like one of your kids just going crazy.
Yeah.
A little monster face.
Yeah.
Yeah, Ty, we like to call him our thug.
Oh, yeah.
He's a savage. He's the sweetest kid, but at the same time does not care.
Yeah, as most little guys, they just don't. They're just boys, you know? Yeah. So
boys will be boys.
Yeah, that's right. Where are you from? Because you're not from Missouri.
Well, complicated story.
Okay.
Technically, I am. I was born in Missouri and then moved to Iowa with my mom after my parents were divorced when I was three.
Okay. Cool. So now I've been through Iowa a couple times.
Yeah.
And I mean, I haven't been to like the cities, if you call it that,
yeah.
But it's like, I mean, Illinois's got nothing on Iowa. You know what I'm saying? Just that flat, like, cornfields, like, it's crazy. I mean, did the scenery and, like, what you saw, did that? Because, okay, I've met all of the people that I've met from, like, Iowa and Idaho, like, it, just that general area, which those are relatively close together. Eh, maybe not. Okay. Well, anyway.
Reference
them out. Let's just say the people from Iowa.
Yeah.
They, and this is not in a bad way at all, but, like, their personality just seems to, like, reflect.
Mm-hmm.
Or the scenery and, like, seems to kind of reflect, like, who they are. Just this very, like dry, but not in a bad way. Because I consider myself dry sometimes. But, like, dry, like, kind of straightforward, to the point. Like, no nonsense. Like, do you feel like
very,
that kind of
very
influenced
blue
you?
Collar.
And you, because you know what I'm talking
about. Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. Yes, it is very blue collar. Every trip we took, I would sleep. So there wasn't much.
Yeah, it wasn't much to see.
No, like when you're in the cities, you know, it is very city-like.
Yeah.
But beyond the few we have, you know, it is tractor pulls and, you know, crash up derbies and, you know, stock car racing on quarter mile dirt tracks. Mm-hmm. And even in the cities, they have that.
Yeah.
And so it's very blue collar country,
country living,
hard work. You know, you gain respect by the handshake you can give type situations.
Nice.
I gotta tell you, I'm going to Iowa. Like, you know, the movie Field of Dreams.
Yep.
Did you hear about that?
No.
No, I mean, like, what MLB is doing?
No. Seriously, no.
Okay, so MLB is basically going to take the farm that they filmed Field of Dreams in.
Wow.
And they're converting it into a baseball, like a temporary baseball stadium. And they invited the Yankees to play there this summer.
So the Yankees will finally be in some good land.
Yeah.
Ooh.
That's right. But anyways, yeah. So when you're that's describing Iowa, I don't entertain those comments. but anyways, so yeah, like they were showing like the field, and literally, if you watch the movie, when they hit a home run, the ball is gone. Like, it's stuck in the cornfield, and they don't have any fence at this stadium that they're building. It's just straight cornfield. So if anyone hits a home run, either the player's gonna run through the corn.
She gone.
Yeah, yep. Or the ball's gone, and it's pretty cool.
Or the player's gone.
Or the player's hey,
children of the corn.
Yeah, exactly. But I was like, I would never find myself in Iowa, and this is like probably the only motivation I have.
Yeah.
And I don't care if I have to sit next to some corn stalks or whatever you call them, because I'm as city as it gets. But I'll do it for the Yankees. Hey,
yeah, that's funny. You know, but you mentioned that you moved there when your parents divorced.
Yes.
So could you just kind of maybe talk a little bit about that? Like, you said three.
Yep.
That's a pretty, you know, that's pretty young.
Right.
So maybe like, I mean, obviously at three, you don't grasp like what's going on.
Right.
But maybe, and I guess this has to do with your childhood in general, but as you started to get older and you started to kind of realize like, wait a second, like my mom and dad or something's not right here. Like, what was that like for you, and what kind of effect did that have?
Well, I'll be honest, I really didn't understand that nothing was right until I was, you know, a teenager.
Oh, okay.
After high school into college, really, of, you know, I just thought, man, this is cool. I get twice the amount of holidays. I get twice the amount
that's
of
one
vacations.
Way to look at it, yeah.
I get, you know, all these extra opportunities. It definitely had its challenges, and it wasn't easy. But for me, it just was normal.
Mm-hmm.
My family has a long history of divorces. I think I only have one uncle who's been married to the same woman. Other than that, everybody in my family's had multiple divorces. So it was really a common thing, and nothing that was really shunned or looked down on in any way.
Yeah.
It obviously had its issues, right? It wasn't, you know, looking back, you conversations and things. It was, you know, stressful and hurtful, and you know, it did not breed good things. But it was odd. Learning a lot of things after and looking back, just kind of remembering that feeling of normalcy, which I mean, I credit, you know, my family, my mom and dad on doing the best they could to make, you know, it work the best they could. So
yeah, for sure. And what age were you about when you kind of figured out maybe, or what age were you when you thought, or did you like, I don't want to be divorced someday. Yeah. Like I want to like, if I get married, I want to like stick with my wife.
Yeah.
I mean, what age did you begin to think that?
Well, I didn't really have a lot of mature thoughts until
reminds me of a story that maybe we'll get there
later
maybe.
On in life when I met some, you know, individuals who helped me think beyond the moment.
Yeah.
But when I started thinking about marriage, I remember being engaged to my wife, Mel, now, and just kind of letting her know, like, I remember saying the statement, I would rather be miserable for 10 years than ever get divorced. So I hope you're ready. We will figure this out.
Yeah.
And that's credited to the stubbornness of my bloodline. So
yeah, that's good. I mean, I would have loved to have seen Melissa's face.
Well, amongst other silly things I said.
Right. Now, because you, okay, so, I mean, you brought it up.
Go ahead.
But you said you didn't have many mature thoughts. So I've seen some pictures of you when you were younger.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said before, like, you're a pretty big dude.
Yeah.
And all the pictures I feel like I've seen are of you, like, with your shirt off. And you've got this, like, Bigfoot Sasquatch pose. And you're, like, either... Because you did... Is it shot put?
Throwing.
Throwing.
Hammer, discus, weight. Yep.
And so you did a lot of sports. Do you feel like that's kind of common for these big dudes that do a lot of sports like that, where it's just like, I don't have a lot of mature thoughts?
Yeah, so some context to that. I was one of the smallest guys in my sport.
Really?
Yes. So, like, you know, men among giants.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think the idea of being as big as possible, getting as strong as possible, I mean, just working hard to do your best was just a mindset, period.
Yeah. And so maybe it wasn't all about how good you could be at math or whatever. It was like, I just want to get stronger.
Yeah, what's math got to do with anything?
Exactly. Yeah. Maybe just to add up how much I'm...
Yeah,
how
much as long I'm as I can measure here. What I'm lifting and, you know, my athletic accomplishments, I was happy.
Yeah, absolutely. When did you get into sports and just to all that you did? Like, did that start from a pretty young age?
Yeah, it did. In Iowa, we have things called Dad's Club, which are, you know, free things that dads kind of, you know, coach and volunteer things. We don't have a lot of, select sports and such, which you do later on, but really young age, it's more or less the have fun kind of sport. But in general, everybody's pretty active. You know, you're outside a lot. During the winters, the snow plows would, you know, build up these giant piles of snow and you play King of the Mountain and, you know, all these different things. So, yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And so when did all of that kind of begin to get like more serious for you? Like, when did you, and I could be wrong, but I kind of, when I look at, or when I think about you as like a younger man, I kind of feel like you were like, I want to make being an athlete like a, I guess a career path would be a, I mean, in a sense it has been for you, but like something that you continually just wanted to pursue.
Yeah.
I mean, am I right? Would I be right in saying that?
I would say sixth grade. Yeah. We had a weightlifting program called Bigger, Faster, Stronger. And
I just thought about that song.
Yeah.
Bigger, faster. Is that right? Bigger, faster, stronger.
You're the music guy. I love weights. No.
Not really.
But that was the first time, I think, for me that I really kind of fit into any situation. And so for me, that was, you know, I just wanted to keep doing that. It felt, you know, it was home, you know?
Yeah.
So I think the drive to be as good as I wanted to be kind of came from never really being that good. And so just constantly having, I was the guy who had little talent, but had a lot of hard work behind it. And so it was, I mean, in college I spent every day doing turns in the hallway. I was a weird guy, you know, constantly watching videos, constantly studying things. But I think that came from not having, it was a perform or leave school kind of situation. Yeah. So, but
right.
as a young person, you know, that weight room atmosphere, Iowa is very big in sports in general. And so our high school had a large athletic program.
Yeah.
For me, I think, that turning point for sports was probably my senior year.
Yeah.
Up until then, it was just kind of like, you know, for fun, goof around. And I was like, oh, you know, I'm getting in shape. But
did you do track?
I did track and cross country.
Track and cross country.
And yeah, I played soccer for a little bit until I got to high school.
Yeah.
But I was okay with being average, you know, because I was just there to have fun. But I think once I hit senior year, I was like, this is my last year, you know, like I almost feel like I've wasted it because I've been content with being average. And I was like, I want to try to be the best. And I almost made it to varsity like on my last race. But, you know, my senior year, which also I think a good coach contributed to that as well.
Absolutely.
You know? Like they motivated me. But, you know, I had my fastest times ever my senior year because I put in the work. And,
yep.
Yeah.
Mindset, it has a lot to do with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
A lot to do with everything.
Yeah, you got to be really headstrong, you know?
You do. You do. Really keep your eyes down and your mind forward.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely.
No, I was going to say, so like, you know, ironically enough, this is like the third podcast in a row we've had kind of like a divorce childhood on there. And one of the things I can recall even on the last two is like, there was a sense of normalcy in the divorce, but then there's like at one point in your life you kind of grasp that like you're kind of like on your own because like your mom and dad are kind of going through their own thing, and then like then they get separated, and then it kind of feels like you're kind of tugged in between. So like it's kind of like you have to almost take care of yourself. And I in a lot of ways you also get that with like your siblings as well, if you have any. But I guess more so specifically, like how did that maybe affect your approach into sports? Like, cause like I know for me, and I've said this before, like my mom and dad were there for me physically, but a lot of times they weren't there for me in terms of maybe emotionally or mentally. So it's kind of like I had to take care of myself. And that was like sports is all I had. Right? Like, did you ever feel that way because of the divorce or whatnot?
Yeah. So I think for me, I struggled with that concept for a long time. And for me, sports was my escape. You know, it was the place that I mean, throughout high school, I'd wake up at 5 a.m., go to swim practice, starting the year with football. I was football late, home late, then swimming. I was up early. We had practice before school, after school. It was my way of, you know, kind of being in my own world. And then I think I can't say I was never taken care of, because up until one specific point, because, you know, it was one divorce right into another marriage. Both my parents got remarried. So it was, you know, two constructive relationships supporting us, right? And I was an only child for a long time. And each marriage, you know, had their struggles like they all do. And I think when I really felt the absence of support was, you know, the end of my junior year, when my stepfather and my mother got divorced. And so that's when that really hit. That was a real, real hard time, as far as lack of support and different things. You know, I won't go in grave detail, but living alone, and going to the, you know, volunteering in student government so I could go to the food line so I could eat. So that way, you know, working at food restaurants so that way I could make sure I had food and different things, to where it was I won't say it was a bad situation.
Sure.
You know, a lot of people were going through a lot of different things. But that was when the lack of support came. I would say emotionally, there wasn't much support. my whole life, because this is where kind of I've grown in that mindset of where my parents didn't have support, you know? And once I really learned their backstory, I was really able to understand, like, well, how could they give me this if they've never had it?
You know? Instantly kind of grow in compassion for your parents.
Absolutely.
And I think we talked about that with Victoria too. Yeah. When she was on, we just talked about, like, it's so easy to, like, be so hard on how your mom and dad raised you, but then it's like, man, like, that's hard, right? You know, especially with what they were taught.
Mm-hmm. They can only teach you what they know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of things, and you know, me and my parents have talked about these things and kind of discussed those, which were not easy conversations, but I'm grateful for the good Lord, for getting me through a lot of situations that I was put in, and situations I put myself in during those times, to get me where I am now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I was to add to that too. Like, you said that this was all happening like your junior year.
Mm-hmm.
And for most people, that's a pretty critical time in a kid's life, because then the following year, you're trying to figure out what you're going to do for the rest of your life, whether it's not necessarily career-wise, but like more so traveling for college or like looking for college. How'd you kind of cope with that at that time? I guess you said sports, but
I got into anything and everything I wasn't supposed to. You know, and literally we had a friend who was graduated, and it was me and two of my good friends who are cousins through marriage, which my wife's like, they're not your cousins. I'm like, I'm from Iowa, they're my cousins. But we would get an obscene amount of alcohol and substances on Friday, and they would last us to Monday. I would recover from Monday through Thursday, and then we would continue the trend. So it was not good.
And so at that point, those sports and being an athlete like wasn't fulfilling you completely.
No.
I mean, because you had to kind of look elsewhere.
Yeah, oops. So kind of to, I guess, complete the trifecta of things of, you know, being casted away, however the teenager will feel it. You know, my mom and my stepdad get divorced. The coaches that have been coaching me all year, and we're about to go, it's my senior year, it's my turn to be poured into, and, you know, they leave. We get new guys who don't care, you know, just all the things where the area where you had the support, you know, completely feeling like it, but it was just total depression, really. Mm-hmm. And just a really low place.
And I feel like for every person that, you know, I guess for every person that decides, like, I'm going to, every person that becomes a Christian, let's put it that way. Like, there is that point in their life where they, it's a very important moment to where you begin to think there's something more.
Mm-hmm.
I've tried this. This is what I'm good at. Okay, this is not fulfilling me. I just got this new thing. Well, that's all. I'm already tired of that. Like, there's got to be something more. You know, was it around that time that you started to think that? Like, was it shortly before college, or maybe after moving to college? Or
So moving to college, it was day after graduation. My dad said, hey, pack your stuff in my car, you're moving with me. So that was moving to college, which I wasn't even in yet. But so it was either, which, you know, pass this thing called the ACT,
mm-hmm.
or go and be a welder or something. And so my dad gave me the option of pass the ACT.
Yeah.
And so, you know, did that year in college. My first year of college was, I'm going to do my best to live the best American pie life I can live. you know, I figured, you know, go full blown,
right,
dumb decisions. You know, that there was a couple of instances there where I could really say God kind of, like, I was bumpers on a bowling alley, mm-hmm. bowling lanes.
Yeah.
Where he just knocked me out of my dumb decisions a couple of times and landed me with some guys who really helped me to see a difference. Because I really, at the end of my freshman year, thought, man, you know, I'm going to grow old, might not get married, but either way, I'm going to be going to parties or hanging out at my house drinking, being miserable, having shallow relationships, and that's just how it's going to be, yeah. You know, like kind of growing up, you know, that yeah. just, this is what life has for me, you know, accept mm-hmm. it. And it was cool to meet some people who really shared God's word, but also shared the change that word could bring when you listen to it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was faced with this kind of this mind shift of, man, there's this life that I see that is possible. I don't know if it's possible. I'm told it's possible. Right, I see right. these relationships yeah. moving forward and getting better mm-hmm. and having like this thing that is in movies, you know, yeah. type situation. But it really allowed me to kind of weigh that and go, man, well, I can either put all my stock in just doing what I think is going to happen and be okay with it, or I can give up everything and mm-hmm. strive for this option, this opportunity.
Yeah.
And so that was the end of my junior year.
Okay.
Like the end of the summer going, or freshman year of college going okay. into my sophomore year of college.
Yeah. And then, and so shortly after that, I mean, you decided to commit your life to Christ, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I was, we were on the way to get baptized, and the church that was available to use their baptismal couldn't find a key.
Yeah.
So I was like, I was in my head thinking, well, I'm either going to do this now or I'm never going to do it.
Yeah.
So I was like, well, let's go to that pond at Linwood behind the dorms. And yeah. It was gross, nasty.
Yeah, I was going to say, nasty. Oh, that's yeah. how you know you're committed.
It was nasty.
Yeah, it's because sometimes like we'll play volleyball by Frimmer.
You can smell it.
Frimmer Pond. And it's like, man, if you lose that volleyball, bye-bye mm-hmm. volleyball, because right. we're not going in to get that.
But. I've seen with my own eyes, like, I'm not going to throw any sports teams out there, but some group of people, because they were both guys and girls, like trying to throw these bikes as far as they can into the pond.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, this is my clarification that I'm never touching that pond ever again.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, there's no telling what you're going to find at the bottom of that pond. Yeah.
You'll find a lot of disc golf.
Oh, I'm sure.
Just yeah. if anybody disc golfs.
Yeah.
Haven't said I've done that, but there might be something there.
Name Mitch Hetty. Phone number. No. But... you know, I was just thinking about that, like with kind of your past and like with the sports and just being like headfirst into that stuff, and then the substance, you know, the substance abuse, the alcohol, the other things that you try, girls, whatever. What was it, you know, when you first started to get into God's word, like what was it about God just initially
yeah.
that made you think, you know what, maybe I can actually find fulfillment in this God? Like, I don't know who he is yet. I'm learning about him, but like, what did you see in him that you were just like, I'm gonna grab onto that?
Yeah, it was the stark difference between what his word suggested you to do and what the world suggested you to do.
Mm-hmm.
It was a stark difference between what I was raised and taught, not by my family, but just by anybody, you know, look after yourself, live by pleasures, do this, you know, do these mm-hmm. certain things compared to, you know, care about other people, you know, refrain from these type of pleasures, except for in, you know, like marriage, right? Mm-hmm. Like refrain from sexual relationships, except for in marriage, because that's where it's actually, reaches its full potential.
Yeah.
You know, just those different things of that, just that stark difference.
Right.
Honestly, it was, yeah. you know, things like, well, this book was written by man, you know, so it's just man's opinion. Those type of things were told to me as well. And when I read it, I'm like, this is nothing any man has ever suggested right. to do.
Yeah.
And so that for me was my first kind of feeling of, man, this is, again, I don't know if it's, you know, for real, but even yeah. so, it's completely different.
Right, for sure. And I think it's easy for us to see, you know, you were talking about like using the word refrain from and
mm-hmm.
do this, don't do that. And we look at those things as rules, and they are, but like ultimately, when you begin to dive deeper, you believe and you see that it's really just God's love playing out.
Yeah.
And I'm sure, like, this is the one thing, you know, if my wife and I ever have kids, you know, like, I think that's one thing that I'm most excited for is to be able to, because I'm so blessed to have a lot of really good, godly older men in my life that have kids, and we'll have a lot of talks about just being a parent. And one thing that they will always say is you will understand the love of God a little bit more when you have a son or daughter. Oh, and I'm
not a little bit more.
A lot more.
When you're going, why won't you just listen to me when I tell you don't do this and you will get in trouble?
Yeah.
Oh, wait. Oh, God. Sorry.
Yeah.
Okay. I love you.
Yeah. But I feel like you get such a better understanding of why God says do this, don't do that. Because as a parent, you're like, just trust me on this. Yeah. You know, like, I've been there and don't do that, you know?
For me, I can sum that up into guidance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of things in my life I never really had guidance on. It was either being told what to do, not in a guiding way, or just kind of like, whoop, there you go. Good luck kind of thing. Or, you know, not so good advice. Like, from a very young age, you know, my school experience, I was the guy who always got picked on. And so, you know, there were times, embarrassing story alert, where I would come home crying because I was getting picked on or different things. And some advice was given was, you know, well, just bury those feelings down. It'll be okay. Type situations, and to where, you know, now, yes, it'll be okay, but let's express those feelings. Let's talk it over.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's think about it, and understand, you know, the full context of the situation.
Right. For sure. Yeah. You know, and so you commit your life to Christ, but you continue to pursue, like, sports and, you know, like, what all were you doing? 'Cause you went to Lindenwood, mm-hmm. correct?
Yes.
What all were you competing in there?
So first year, it was a make or break year. So it was football and track, whatever I could get a scholarship in, that's what I stuck with.
Okay.
Ended up sticking with track, 'cause they didn't really have anybody. So I was like, you know, easy shoe in. But I actually ended up being pretty good at it. Not that good, but
no one.
But so track and field was my sport of choice, and yeah,
cool. So as you moved forward, like,
cool.
Why you? Ryan always puts the mic up to his mouth, and I'm like, all right, Ryan, what do you got to say there, buddy?
Can't put my finger on it.
Yeah, nice. I like you. You fit in perfectly. So how did you learn, like, being like a new Christian, how did you learn to balance, because that's not the right word, but how did you, because the way that I kind of see it, you know, God, like, being an umbrella, mm-hmm. and everything just falls under that. What was that like for you? Because before, big contrast, when you wake up in the morning, cool, well, how much am I going to lift today?
Yeah.
You know, oh man, am I going to be ready for this comp that I've got? But then your mindset changes.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, Paul says I need to die to myself today. So how did that mindset change for you? And, like, what did your pursuit of sports look like after coming to know Jesus?
Yeah. Well, I think one of my college coach, he would... Mitch, prior to God, would be, you know, fighting with him every single day and screaming and cussing and, you know, being very angry at practice and my performance. And so I think after God, the choice to be a good example was the first thing. And honestly, for me, I've always struggled with allowing sport to be a platform and not my idol.
Right.
And so I've had a lot of failed attempts. I think that's my, you know, my go-to. I've come to realize is, you know, I'll assist through my examples of failure and perseverance. But, you know, with that, it was doing my best to, live down, who I was, and learning, I, you know, James 2 through 7 is my go-to verse about, you know, considering trials of many kind, pure joy, allowing it to build perseverance. And if you, I'm pulling out my
Bible. I'm the same way.
I'm like talking.
I'm
like,
exactly the same way.
But, you know, the end of that is, you know, if you lack wisdom, pray for it.
Right.
You know, I'm going to just for clarity, yeah. But consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. If any of you lack wisdom, you should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to you. And that was something for me that I prayed for a lot and continue to just because of my lack of thoughtfulness.
Yeah, because you said before, you know, you didn't have such mature thoughts.
No, not at all.
And so wanting to be kind of like Solomon, you know, we've been going through this sermon series just about a wise guy wanted to know and just look at, like, in a lot of ways, I mean, very similar to, you know, Solomon just pursued all of these different things, seeing what would fulfill him. And then, you know, over just kind of, I think God like humbling him, just being like, listen, dude, you can do all this stuff, but it's not going to fulfill you.
Right.
And then kind of gaining that wisdom to be like, you know what? I think serving God is the best thing that I could do.
And so my biggest thing that I had to, you know, work on was pride.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was, you know, and in our small groups, you know, we have guy times that we break down into, and, you know, my first guy group, I think it was like our third meeting, they handed me this book called Prideful Soul's Guide to Humility. And I was like,
Fun fact. I never needed to read that book. Do you guys know that?
No, totally.
Never needed to.
Well, I didn't think so either. Cause those were my exact words.
If you read the first sentence, that should make you want to keep reading.
Yeah, if you don't think you need this book, you need
exactly.
this book.
Exactly.
But
well,
now,
I think the first sentence is like, it's not about you. It's
right,
the
yeah,
first sentence.
That is, yeah. my exact words, they handed it to me and they didn't say anything. And I looked at it and I read it and I'm like, I'm not prideful. What do I need this for? You know.
And then they proceeded to just put a mirror in front of your face.
Mm-hmm. And they said, I think you should read it. Well, you know, I spent the next month going through the first couple pages and throwing it against my wall and starting over and... You know, but, you know, I had to change a lot of me first, you know, really renew my mind, right? Like, so the scriptures say to align myself with the thought and actions of Christ.
Yeah.
This is kind of a follow-up question to all this. Like, you know, we're talking about guidance, and, you know, within receiving guidance, there also has to be some discipline on your end, you know, to take that guidance. And, you know, we can kind of go back and lead up to this point, but you also have like a brand, Headstrong, right? Mm-hmm. And so how has Headstrong shown up both in your like fitness side, but also in your faith as well? Like, you know, cause those two groups can kind of intermesh in a sense.
So a lot of people, some people know this, but a lot of people don't know, like Headstrong actually came from like a hashtag that I kind of in a corny way used a lot, which was, you know, strong in the Lord and, you know, Christ is the head of the body, Headstrong. Plus, Julie Taylor was like, hey, you should put Head, your last name, and Strong together, too.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like, it all works. So shout out to Julie Taylor. She's pretty awesome.
She's
graphic
cool.
designer.
Recklick.
Recklick. But I think, honestly, you know, that brand, that identity, again, you know, I've had ups and downs, successes and failures with using it as a proper platform for God. And so I think that's just I just keep going up and down. As long as, you know, and that's why now kind of my going through some hard times, just some stressful things, you know, my new saying is, you know, eyes down, mind forward. I always have to keep those types of things in my mind and on me to keep me going forward and in the right direction, because I'm actually not that disciplined of a person.
Well,
shocker.
You fooled a lot of us.
Yeah.
So.
And you know, I where a lot of those really good athletes when I was younger spent their summers going to camps or working out or running or whatever it was, I spent it eating Twinkies and cupcakes on the couch. And, you know, so the idea of discipline was something I've had to really work on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And speaking of discipline, you know, kind of going back a little bit, on one of our episodes with Donnie Dillon, he talked about how he was a Christian student athlete.
Mm-hmm.
And on campus, just being a student athlete alone requires a lot of discipline, in a sense of like, not necessarily, I don't want to say like your image, but like people look at you in a different way, right? And then like you have the discipline of managing schoolwork and practice and competing. And then you add the Christian factor to it, then it's like ministry, discipling, well, it's all the same thing, but then the other two of like the student responsibility and the athlete responsibility.
Yeah.
And you would think that you would have a lot of discipline if you're able to somehow manage that, right? And I mean, I'm not really getting into like a question, but it's kind of surprising to me because like I feel like you have successfully done that on campus. So like you're, how you view discipline is a lot different than how I view discipline, because like I don't think I would be able to do student athlete Christian in a lot of ways, because I already felt the burden of like trying to keep up with being a student alone,
right?
And then like having to fit a couple hours to practice and then a couple hours to compete and then still maintain my responsibility to like the church that I made to Christ, of continuing to advance the kingdom. And I'm just like, that's a lot. Even saying it is a mouthful.
It was challenging.
Yeah.
I think to kind of carry on that idea of, you know, something I've learned in my profession and just psychology and sports psychology and different people I've listened to and gotten advice from and different things, you know, discipline comes from the desire to achieve something. You know, Matt, I know you, I've known you for a long time, and you're a very disciplined person when it comes to the things you want to do. Just like anybody, you know, Landon, like the second best pool player in the world.
That's, you know, not true.
Second best, but
it's not true because he's the first best.
No. Oh, that's true. Yeah.
False as well.
He would never want to like be the strongest guy in the gym, but you know, he has this, those same aspects of discipline, because he, you know, and I think it, in my failures of not using my platform appropriately, I've learned to focus more on the gift that God has given me, to keep that as a, you know, as a high priority of using that, to help people, and making sure I do my best either prior to failing or after I'm failing, and giving God that glory to give him that glory.
Yeah.
And that really, honestly, a lot of people are like, oh, that, you know, it makes it easier.
Yeah.
You know,
how did you cope with like having to say no to certain things?
Oh man, I've had some really good offers on the table throughout the years. And they've all said, you're crazy. Because I'm like, you know, I can't move down there. Like, why? Because I got real good people up here. Like, but these opportunities, go back, let's stick with college theme, because, you know, but my senior year, we had a new head coach. I already laid out this whole next year, because I was like, I'm going to be responsible. I'm going to be disciplined. I'm going to talk to my coach to get everything planned out for the next year. New head coach comes in, that's all gone. And I'm supposed to go to all these really big meets, Big 10, Big 12 meets at Duke and just all these different things, or Drake Relays, I'm sorry, not Duke, but Drake Relays and the Kansas Relays and just all these really big meets. And they all had happened to have fallen on, you know, a retreat or something that I usually go to all every year in order to keep myself on track. And so, you know, I did my best to plan ahead and go, hey, I'll go to this smaller meet. I'll still perform, because thankfully in track, as long as you throw a distance and they mark it and it counts, you're good. Like, you don't have to go to the big meets to, you know, get these things and different stuff. But, you know, I was really faced with a hard decision to, well, you're either going to go to this one meet or you're going to get kicked off the team. And, you know, my response to all of them were, you know that if it wasn't for me going to these things, I wouldn't be the person I am today. So I'm not going to stop going. And mm-hmm. so that's kind of, you know, I really put stock in what is really giving me a strong foundation to be what I need to be, more as a person and as an example, and to be able to share a positive influence, regardless if it's on a huge platform or a small platform, over the stories of being able to say, man, I went to the Drake Relays, and you know, which is cool, but it's like, who at this table knows about the Drake Relays?
Right.
Exactly. Like,
yeah, yeah, good point. Yeah, and like, no, and the reason why I'm asking is also because, you know, when you talk about prioritizing, like, you have to say no to some things, and
yeah,
like even like you mentioned, like the Drake Relays, but then also it kind of teaches you how to say no, like, later on in life, and you kind of know, like, okay, this is where I want to be, and then if it doesn't benefit me or doesn't push me towards where I want to be, then yeah, I'm just gonna have to say no. But it doesn't mean that it makes it easier to say no,
right?
And I think that comes down to, like, the discipline.
It does. And I'll throw some mind shift on you with that. Is I do my best to say yes and not no. And so I say yes to the things that I know will benefit me. Mm-hmm. And not just me alone, but benefit me in a way that allows me to benefit others. Because it's, if I'm always saying no, then I might say no to something that's good. Mm-hmm. And so I focus on trying to say yes. You know, I use this analogy with food. Like, I used to be over 300 pounds. I was not a very disciplined person. I just did not take care of myself. And so chasing that idea of craving good things and being able to say yes to good things was, you know, interviewing my food or interviewing this opportunity or interviewing, you know, what is this going to do for the long term? Mm-hmm. Not right now, because, you know, it's an infinite mindset. You know, what is this decision going to impact 5 years down the road? Mm-hmm. 3 years. Yeah. Like,
right.
What is this going to be? Something that's like, is awesome now, but puts more stress on my family. Is this going to be something that's awesome now, but it's going to put more stress on my relationships with those who are discipling me? Like, all these different things. Is this going to be something that, yeah, I got to go do this cool thing, but did I miss out on a greater opportunity with someone that I was witnessing to?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. You know, I think you, I don't know, I really, what I was kind of thinking of with a lot of what you were talking about, especially with the discipline and just the passion part of things, because, like, we've talked about this a lot, but, like, we all are passionate about a lot of things at this table. And, but I think for us, it really, you know, if God is at the forefront of what we're thinking,
mm-hmm,
and our goal, you know, and at least just in this life and then in the next, I think it's really just all about, and I like what you said with using, you know, using athletics and training and that kind of thing just as a platform. It's just kind of figuring out, how can I channel my passion? Like, how can I channel this energy in a way that's going to be best, like you said, not just for myself, but how can I benefit others?
Yeah.
And just to, I guess, to kind of bring our time to a close, you know, over the years that I've known you, like, I've seen you do a lot of different things. I've seen you be an athlete and compete, mm-hmm, in different competitions around the country. I've seen you coach, you know, high school students and other college students. I've seen you have your own gym and all these different things. But, like, I never ever once doubted why you were doing it. And a verse that, you know, would always come up to my mind, really just for any, like, anybody that trains and works out, but also strives to pursue Christ, is 1 Timothy 4:8. For physical training is of some value, but godliness has value for all things, holding promise for both the present life and life to come. And just looking at the way that you've carried yourself, the way that you've tried to train, like, yes, you wanted these young men and women to, like, be the best that they could physically, but I always knew, I was like, oh, there's Mitch. I could see him training these young men and women up in the way that they should go. And if they didn't know who Jesus was, like, I knew that the way that you taught them, the way that you carried yourself, was going to be reflected, you know, upon who Jesus was. And I don't know. So I just think that that's been a really, really cool thing to see. And so I just appreciate that about you.
I appreciate that.
But yeah, just kind of bring us up to speed. Like, what are you doing nowadays?
Well, sadly, but, you know, purposely, I had to close my gym down in February. And so now I'm actually working for this company called Emmaus Homes, which has been a complete culture shock for me, but yeah, really awesome. You know, this company, they provide, you know, assistance for adults with disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
And the main goal is to help them live as independently as possible and assisting them, advocating for them, helping them live their life. Mm-hmm. And so right now I'm a sourcer and a recruiter for them. A lot of people have asked me, what's the difference? And I said, well, before I would find people, I'd see if I could help them with a problem, and then mm-hmm. I would ask them for money. Now, you know, now I find people, I ask them if they have a problem, which is not having a job.
Yeah.
And then I offer them a job. So
that's really cool.
You yeah. give them money.
I give them money. Yeah. That's so awesome. It's really cool. You know, I'm, you know, really blessed. I don't use that word often, but I don't know how else to put it. You know, the timing of everything has again reminded me, and I've had a lot of hiccups and road bumps and different things in my life to where this is just another example of how God's in control. And when you trust him, he's doing his best to allow you to let him take care of you.
Yeah.
And you know, there's the storybook Bible mm-hmm. for kids. Yeah. And the Adam and Eve story in the garden is like, and there's the first lie, you know, God doesn't love you.
Oh, dude, that I kid you not, I'm not a crier.
Yeah.
But one time, I especially don't cry in front of people very often. But one time I was doing communion for my group and I read like the crucifixion story, and yeah. I could not make it through just this ugly mess. So if anyone like really just wants to get to know the heart of God, go get the storybook Bible.
Jesus storybook Bible is amazing.
Phenomenal.
We read it with our kids most nights, and the way that it breaks down, just even that, like that first lie, mm-hmm. like it is what it is. It's a lie.
Yeah.
And you know, I can't go through any of my life examples, no matter how bad it was, and look at it and go, God was not watching out for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, God was definitely watching out for me, and always when you're talking about Acts 17, times and places, yeah. allowing me the opportunity to get to be closer to him. And so, and I do believe he does that for everybody. And yeah. so it's just really cool to have a lot of men in my life, a lot of people in my life to remind me of that. I would not be making better choices now if it wasn't for those men like that.
That's cool. Well, sorry, were you going to say something?
I wanted to, to add to that, you know, and this is going to get real sentimental real fast.
All right.
I'm ready. But, you know, you're one of those people in my life that you studied the Bible with me. And I mean, I tell everybody that you did, but to put it on the podcast and on recording, you know, I like how you're thankful for those guys. I'm thankful for you in the same way. Cause you know, you, not that you stop, but cause you always do remind me of all these lies that Satan tells me in my head. And you've been a constant for me since day one. So I just wanted to say thank you for that. And as stubborn as I was, you never gave up on me.
Love you, man.
Love you too, dude. But as soon as you said that, I was like, yeah, this is it. This is my opportunity to say thank you. So I can have it on recording so I don't have to say it anymore.
There you go. Hey, you got to get it in when you can. And if you just soundbite it and send it to me every once in a while.
Now it's just repeat.
Yeah. If anyone's curious about it, just say, just go listen.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, the one question that we always end with. So knowing what you know now, what would you tell your younger self whenever you needed to hear it the most?
I wouldn't tell him anything.
That's first.
the reason being, because if I, one of two things, I either wouldn't have listened, mm-hmm. or if I did, I wouldn't be where I am.
Okay.
I've been through a lot of hard times in my life, and I wouldn't take any of them away because, you know, they allow me to find common ground with other people,
mm-hmm.
And allow me to help them understand that they're not alone, that God loves them, and that, you know, they have the same opportunities that I had.
Mm-hmm.
Doing the things I did, being put through the things I was put through, the choices either I did or didn't make, whatever it was, you know, they have a God that loves them and that sent his son to die for them. So,
and honestly, that's actually a really good point, because if we were told those things and we listened somehow, because like I know back when I needed to hear it, I didn't listen, wouldn't have listened, but like we wouldn't have we wouldn't have gone through the things that we have, even though they're super painful.
Yeah.
Like God's been able to do really amazing things through them.
Absolutely.
And in a lot of ways, like some of my biggest hurts, like those are the things that brought me to knowing who God is. But it's more so maybe for our listeners out there, maybe if someone's listening to this and they're in that place to where they're like, well, that's maybe I need to listen to that.
Yeah.
Like I've screwed this up. I've screwed that up. I've been pursuing the wrong things. Like it's really for them, you know, I don't know, just anybody that needs to hear it.
Anybody.
But that's a good point.
I grew up in the church. I always heard the things I needed to hear, but I still made dumb
mistakes. Yeah.
So sometimes you just got to learn from experience and grow from that. So,
definitely. Yeah.
Use
cool.
It.
Well, this has been a blast.
Very
Mitch,
grateful.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you for being here, and thank you to these guys. They do an awesome job.
Thanks, Upshot, for letting us have it here.
Thanks, Upshot.
Yeah. Absolutely. So, on behalf of the team, this is us signing out. So we will see you next time.
See you next time.
So by now, your coffee cup is probably pretty low, so I'll keep this short. Thank you for listening in. Make sure you hit the subscribe button and leave a comment. We'd love to hear how these stories are impacting your life. For more content like this, you can follow us at Brewing Narrative on Facebook and Instagram.